Before the Trump administration, we had 8 years of Barack Obama basically apologizing for America's strength and dismissing terrorist groups like ISIS. Those same years saw then-Secretary of State John Kerry continually insist that America simply needs to talk and negotiate with our enemies. How'd all that work out? ISIS, in effect, became a terrorist nation. A citizen uprising in Iran was ignored. China and Russia flexed their muscles at innocent people, and North Korea was launching missiles. Turn the page to the Trump administration, and the story certainly changes dramatically. Our next guest with his new best-selling book explains why this has happened and how important it is for the actions being taken to continue for future needs and solutions. His book is Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies. He's a former deputy assistant to President Trump for strategy and currently the national security strategist for the Fox News Channel, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. Thanks for being here today, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And you can follow Dr. Gorka on Twitter at S-A-B Gorka and keep on top of
him. S-E-B.
S-E-B, I'm sorry, Gorka. And you can follow his very insightful observations about the here and now. What was it that you set out to do with Why We Fight?
Well, my first book, Defeating Jihad, focused on groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Now I wanted to broaden the aperture and discuss all the threats we face. All the ones you mentioned in the introduction, Russia, North Korea, China, Iran, and talk about how the president's going to deal with them and how we're going to defeat them. And then to reinstill in the readers that understanding of just how amazing our country is and the great heroes who have given their all for it. So there's a strategic analysis of the threats, how to deal with them, and then stories of American heroes through the centuries, right back to Stephen Decatur in our war with the first jihadis. We fought the Barbary Pirates off the coast of Tripoli 200 years ago, through the amazing story of Chesty Puller, Marine Corps legend in World War II, then a naval aviator who I actually had the honor of meeting, the captain Eugene Red McDaniel, who was captured by the Viet Cong, spent 6.5 years as a prisoner of war in the Hanoi Hilton. And then lastly, a man who never wore a uniform but is as much a hero as anybody else, and that's Whitaker Chambers, a man who the left tried to destroy, just like they tried with Judge Kavanaugh, but who stood up for the truth and who never surrendered. So it's you know, strategic analysis plus amazing stories of American heroes.
You give some very insightful wake-up calls, too, because we hear often in the here and now about what's considered to be an unconventional war being new territory. We have to explore. We have to decide what to do, how to approach, be careful, right. Be cautious. Unconventional war is not a new issue for America to face.
No, it's really the normality of war. When we say war to the average American, you know, I guess they think about, you know, Saving Private Ryan or, you know, tank divisions fighting tank divisions. That's conventional war, and that's actually the anomaly. If you look at the last 200 years, if you look at all the wars that have been fought in the world, 80% of them, the majority, have been what we call unconventional or irregular war, meaning our militaries fight non-state actors, whether it's the Barbary Pirates, whether it's Taliban, whether it's Al-Qaeda. And that's what we have to get ready to fight because, you know, if you're a nation like China or Russia, you're never going to win a conventional war with America. We will crush you. But if you want to use unconventional means, information operations, cyber warfare, little green men, that's the only way to undermine a hyperpower like we are. So, yes, irregular warfare is war.
Hitler, Stalin, and I can add to those that list too, they rose through ideas first, and then it turned to violence and stifling the freedom of individuals. Were we on that path during the Obama years, as far as enabling Kim Jong-un, for example, to go even further past the point where he went before Trump came in?
Well, just look at, to take politics out of the equation, irrespective of who anyone voted for, look at what happened under those 8 years. And, I mean, that's why my book has the subtitle it has. So it's Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies. Look at what President Obama started his presidency with, a global apology tour where he basically said anything that's bad in the world is our fault. He decided to withdraw America from the global scene. He actually used the phrase leading from behind, which is, of course, an oxymoron. And what was the result? You mentioned some of them. Russia invaded its neighbor and took their territory. China started to remilitarize, built fake islands in the South China Sea to put military bases on. Iran profited from $140 billion the Obama administration released to them as part of the JCPOA Iran deal. And then we have North Korea actually launching ballistic missiles over the Sea of Japan, endangering our ally Japan. So final metric, really shocking if people haven't heard it before. By the end of the Obama administration, we had 65 million refugees in the world. That is a world's record. We had less refugees in 1945 after 6 years of carnage of World War II, after the death camps, after Nagasaki, after Hiroshima. So America retreated under Obama, and the world became a very, very dangerous place. And thank the good Lord, we have a new commander-in-chief.
Talking with Dr. Sebastian Gorka, why we fight defeating America's enemies with no apologies. You can follow him on Twitter, at SCB Gorka, and keep on top of his thoughts and views on what is happening. Going back to the issue of ideas, because I think that is just way overlooked, especially by, we have so many in, I don't want to always say decision-making seats, but certainly those of pseudo-expert seats who have never been involved in warfare other than studies of it. And I think that adds to the confusion and the lessening of understanding that someone like myself or anyone as an observer can have. The value of the defeat of ideas, what strategies out of warfare history can best be used today to accomplish that?
Yeah, I have a whole chapter on this, and it's titled Ideas Matter, because ideology, ideology can be your deadliest enemy, whether it's the Nazis of World War II or whether it's the communists of the Cold War. If you have an enemy that has a powerful ideology and a will to win, that can be incredibly detrimental. Look at the Vietnam War. We were the most powerful nation in the world, and we would go to war with a bunch of guys who had rusty rifles and sharpened wooden sticks. That should have been a cakewalk, but it wasn't. The communist determination of the Viet Cong and the fact that we as a nation lost our will to fight back home thanks to the left meant that we did not cover ourselves in glory. And we basically, that iconic photograph of that Huey helicopter taking off from the roof of our embassy in Saigon, that's not what should have happened to America. So, yes, this is not just a historic reality. Think of the frightening fact that, according to the Victims of Communism Foundation that did a recent poll, 42% of millennials today would like to live in a socialist or communist America. That's after the last century saw more than 100 million people murdered in the name of socialism. In the upcoming midterms, 40 Democrat candidates have self-described themselves as socialists. So this isn't just history. This is right now. And that's why I called my book Why We Fight. And that's why on November the 6th, we cannot allow the mob to take control of our country.
Well, that brings about the idea, too, the value of ideas and how the mob's ideas, it's almost where if you can speak the loudest, the most frequently, you're going to influence more people, unfortunately, and the media being the enablers of the mob, I think that's seeing that equation come to life.
No, the media has been absolutely reprehensible. I just look at the recent the bomb threats, and that may turn out to be hoaxes because at least half the devices would never be able to detonate and weren't designed to do so. But you have people, I watched yesterday, MSNBC actually have a guest on who said the following: the person who mailed the bombs was doing so on behalf of Donald Trump. And the host of the news program did absolutely nothing to challenge them. And then you have all this outrage about these devices that did nobody any harm, but no outrage, literally non-stories, when there are the ricin attacks, the white powder attacks against the president, his family, the Secretary of Defense, the president's former daughter-in-law had to be hospitalized after receiving an envelope of white powder at her home. Where's Jake Tapper when that happens? Where's Anderson Cooper? Nowhere, because they're not journalists. They're part of the socialist activist agenda.
And, of course, we've seen the people, and I posted on Facebook, every side is going to have their unhinged, but it's the right. It's the provoking of the unhinged that is the issue, and certainly the left has done that. And you can see from the shooting of Steve Scalise to the threats received by senators who voted for Brett Kavanaugh, and at all levels, too. We just had a Republican candidate for a House seat in New Jersey's 11th district get a threatening letter against his children.
When you have President Obama's attorney general, the attorney general under President Obama, say, when they go low, we kick them, then you are inciting violence. When you have Maxine Waters repeatedly in public call for the harassment of members of the Trump administration, there's only one political side that's normalizing violence. And let's remember that shooter at the baseball field in Virginia who almost killed Steve Scalise, that was a Bernie Sanders volunteer. And after that attempt to murder all of those Republican congressmen, you didn't see one conservative, not a member of the media, not a politician, try to exploit that for party political gains. But now, when the shoe is on the other foot, the Democrats have no compunction in doing that, and it's absolutely disgusting.
Dr. Gorka, with his new book, Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies, he presents to you a very easy-to-understand and embrace history lesson of warfare, and very, very insightful that I think you'll learn a lot from, and at the same time, you'll also realize how much of that history and the reality is useful and vital in many instances today. Along the way between each chapter, you're going to learn about, as Dr. Gorka mentioned at the start, a few of our many American heroes. I was especially glad to see Red McDaniel get the recognition in your book because he's been a longtime hero of mine as well. Learning is challenging in some cases. It's necessary in every case. And Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies is certainly part of that necessary learning process. You can follow Dr. Gorka on Twitter at SEB Gorka. Dr. Sebastian Gorka, thank you so much for what you do with your writing, and you're making us more aware of what truly matters and is important. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. God bless you and the listeners.